The Shop by Dave Baldwin.
It was a day much like any other. Any other June day, that is. It was warmish with some low cloud and the ever-present threat of rain. The sort of day that might tempt you to venture out in a short-sleeved shirt, but only if you carried an umbrella. The weather forecast had promised warm sunshine with occasional light rain, a typical English forecast for mid-June. I had ignored the forecast, but then I like to live without forecast, without warnings and glimpses into the future. I would handle life and all that it had to offer as and when it occurred. No point in looking to foresee what might happen. It just as soon might not. My name, by the way, is Leonard Davis. I'm the proud proprietor of a small antique shop in the town. Well, I like to call it an antique shop, but that's perhaps an aspiration rather than actuality. Some might refer to it as a junk shop, or more kindly, a bric-a-brac store. But however the locals might describe it, it is a matter of great pride to me. For 12 years, I'd been an assistant manager in a local supermarket. That generally means that I stacked shelves. Then, on the death of my mother 6 months ago, I left my job and took a lease on a lock-up shop in the town. And it was there that Leonard's Antiques was established. My initial stock amounted to much of the content of my late mother's house, all which I'd now inherited. It was only when I started to clear the property that I realised just what a hoarder my mother had been. Every cupboard, every case, every box was crammed with items, many going back to her childhood. Whilst nothing seemed to be of great value, the sheer amount of material was more than sufficient to fill the small shop. And it has prospered. Most people seemed sceptical about my chances of making a living from this seemingly unlikely venture, but they were wrong. Visitors to the town are fascinated to find such a quaint little shop in the centre of town, sandwiched between Marks and Spencer and Lloyd's Bank. They've provided me with a modest living and the pure joy of feeling free and self-sufficient. Much of the stock from my mother's house still remains and is supplemented by my purchases from local car boot sales. I feel that I'm really beginning to get the feel for this business. It was around 8:30 on that June evening that I set out to walk the mile or so from my house back to the shop. I had locked the shop at 5:30. Business had been slow that day, and I was keen to get home to cook my favourite meal of sausage and mash. It was only after finishing the meal and relaxing my favourite easy chair with a newspaper that I realised that my reading glasses were still at the shop. It was a warm, sunny summer evening, so I thought I'd take a stroll back to the town to fetch them. In the 20 minutes or so that it took me to walk to the shop, the weather had taken a turn for the worse. Dark clouds now cloaked the sky, and I was pleased to reach the shop to escape a sharp, chill wind that made me wish that I'd worn a jacket. But as I unlocked the shop door and let myself into the cluttered main room, I felt no respite from the cold breeze. On the contrary, it felt colder in there than outside. A strange draught seemed to be coming from somewhere. I checked the door behind me. It was firmly closed. I went into the back room, switching on the single light bulb which illuminates the stacks of books, records and general stuff which represents my stock. There is a rear door to the premises and a toilet door beside it. Both were firmly closed. But the strange draught persisted here too. It was as I turned to go back into the main shop that the toilet behind me flushed. I turned and stood stock still, my eyes pinned to the toilet door on the other side of the room. My mind was racing. No one else has access to the shop. The front door had been locked. The back door has just one key, which is on my keyring in my pocket. The toilet has no window. Whoever was in that toilet must have been there when I locked up at 5:30. I stood waiting for about 5 minutes before calling out. Hello? Hello? Who's there, please? Come out now, please. Please come out now. There's no problem. I just don't want to lock you in again. Please. But there was no reply. No indication that there was anyone there. I tried again. Look, if you're not going to come out, I'm going to open the door. Is that all right? Yes? I'm going to open the door now. At that point, I walked across the room to the toilet door and taking a firm grip of the handle, turned it and flung the door open to be met by a rush of ice-cold air. The tiny room contained a small wash-hand basin and a toilet with an old-fashioned high-level system operated by a chain. The system was making a refilling sound, and the chain was gently swinging. The room was empty. I just stood there, holding the door open in complete disbelief. My first impulse was to leave the shop. Something strange was happening, something threatening. But best to leave the scene. Give it some thought. Come back tomorrow. My thoughts were disturbed by a bright flash of light from the shop behind me. I turned as a violent cracking, crashing sound came from above. It sounded as if the whole building was about to collapse on me. I rushed out into the shop and peered out of the grubby window to see and hear rain gushing from the sky as if from some giant waterfall. As I watched, another flash of lightning hit the shop in a cold white light before a further crash of thunder rolled across the sky immediately above me. I could feel my heart thumping and threatening to burst out of my chest. It's a storm, yet. Just a storm. I couldn't go out in this weather. Just have to wait until the storm passes. I would close the door to that back room and barricade it. Stop anything coming into the shop. Stop what? There's nothing there. The room was empty. This was ridiculous. I'd sit here in the shop until the rain stops and then go home. I switched on the shop light and perched on a battered easy chair in the corner of the shop. My eyes never strained from the door to that back room. My mind was in turmoil, trying to make sense of what I'd just witnessed. There must surely be a simple and logical explanation. Perhaps the flushing lever of the system had been jammed in the down position since the toilet was last used. And the vibration of my footsteps as I walked in that back room had caused the lever to free itself, resulting in the toilet flushing and the chain rising. That was it. That was definitely what had happened. What else could it possibly be? cold. The draught around the room persisted while the rain hammered onto the shop window. I needed something warmer than this short-sleeved summer shirt. I'd used the old sheepskin flying jacket I'd picked up at a local car boot sale. It adorned a battered mannequin looking out at the rain from the window of the shop. It was when I turned the dummy round to remove the coat that I saw that this badly disfigured World War II pilot was wearing not flying goggles, but reading glasses. My reading glasses. I tried to rationalise this new mystery, but try as I might, I could conceive of no happening, no series of events that could account for my glasses adorning that disfigured plaster face. I decided that they'd been there before I left the shop that afternoon. That's why I'd failed to spot them and bring them home. But how did they get there? Who would have done that, and why? I put on the flying jacket and settled down into the chair. Why did they ever call this an easy chair? It was dreadfully uncomfortable. The seat lacked cushion, and the thinly covered coil springs threatened unspeakable damage at every move. I was reduced to sitting on the floor, facing the window, resting my back against the wall. It is surely a tribute to the human spirit that in spite of all the unusual and disturbing happenings of the last half hour, I fell asleep huddled on the floor in that scruffy flying jacket. I was woken by the sound of a heavy vehicle outside the shop. I looked at my watch. It was just after 6 o'clock. My legs ached as I stood up and went to the window. It was barely daylight outside. A large box van was delivering goods to the supermarket. It was strangely reassuring after the unusual events of the night. Quite normal. Not the end of the world. It looked like the dawning of a perfectly ordinary day. I turned around. Yes, perfectly ordinary. Apart from the fact that the figure of a man stood in the wide open doorway to the back room, staring at me through bespectacled eyes. No need to wait now. The rain had stopped. I'll leave this place and get home. I went to the shop door and found it locked. Locked? But I had the only key. It's in my pocket. How could it be locked? I gave the door a good shaking, but to no avail. Then I used the lone key to unlock the door and I left, locking it behind me. I walked home, wearing the scruffy flying jacket. I just reached my front gate when a familiar voice called out.
Morning, Len. You're up and about early. Couldn't sleep.
It was a neighbour, James. He was pushing his bicycle, which was festooned with fishing paraphernalia. Oh, morning, James. No, I had to go down to this shop. Just coming home for some breakfast.
Oh, you retail moguls. What busy lives you lead. I'm just off to do an hour's tench fishing at the canal. They're best first thing in the morning.
All right. I didn't know that you were a fisherman.
Oh, Lord, yes. Ever since I was a kid. I keep meaning to ask you if you have any books on fishing in your shop.
Well, yeah, I've got stacks of books. And I'm sure I've seen some on fly fishing. You'll have to come down and have a browse.
Oh, great. Well, what about this afternoon?
Yeah, that would be fine. Pop in at any time.
Well, thanks, sir. See you later.
Right. Good luck with the tench.
What?
The fishing. Hope you catch some tench.
Tench? Oh, yes. Thanks. Bye.
That all seemed somehow unreal. As if James was an actor struggling with a badly learned script. I watched him as he mounted his bicycle and wobbled unsteadily down the road. Perhaps I was beginning to doubt everyday reality. Once indoors, I washed, shaved and showered. Then, after a cup of coffee, I began to feel refreshed and human again. The events of the previous evening were, to say the least, strange. But it would be wrong to read anything sinister into things for which there must be some logical explanation. I picked up the newspaper, only to realise that I'd left my reading glasses on that dummy in my shop. I sat back in the armchair and dozed off. I awoke and, looking at the mantel clock, was shocked to find that it was just after 11:30. I'd been asleep for about 4 hours. I was immediately concerned that the shop had not been opened that morning. I'd let down my customers. Then, on reflection, I was amused at my own concern. What customers? It was a Wednesday morning. The very thought that customers clutching wads of banknotes were waiting to gain access to my shop on a Wednesday morning was laughable. No, I'd take the day off. Stay at home. You'd perhaps do those accounts I've been putting off for so long. I'd made myself a sandwich and was sifting through the pile of paper that constituted my financial records when I remembered my encounter with my neighbour James and his intention to visit the shop this afternoon to browse through my old books. Perhaps I ought to go down and open the shop anyway. It was always easy to find reasons not to struggle with my accounts. Any close examination of my finances invariably ended in disappointment. I would look at them at the weekend. Finishing my sandwich and donning the flying jacket, I set out once more to walk to the shop. I usually walked there because there was no place to park nearby in the town centre. The closest long-term parking place involved a walk of about half a mile each way to the shop and a fee of £4. Anyway, this constituted my only exercise beyond mowing my small lawn. It was around 1:45 when I reached the shop. As I put my key into the locker, I saw James through the glass of the door. He was going into the back room. Had I left the shop door unlocked? I removed the key and turned the door handle. No, it was still locked. Then how had James let himself in? I reinserted the key, unlocked the door and went in. I walked into the back room. It was empty. The room had once more that icy draught that seemed to come from every direction. I opened the toilet door. It was empty. I checked the back door. It was locked. I walked back into the shop and stood looking towards that cold room. This wasn't my imagination. I'd stood not 12 feet from this person. I'd seen him go into that room. A room with no window and a locked door, and no means of exit, and yet I was suddenly startled as the shop door opened behind me. I turned. It was James.
Hi, Lang. Are you okay?
Okay. Why?
You look as if you've seen a ghost. Is it not convenient for me to look for those books now? I can always come back some other time.
No. It's fine. Just help yourself. They're through here. I'll make us a cup of tea.
Oh, that would be nice. Thanks.
I'm afraid the books are in no particular order, so you'll just have to hunt through them.
Oh, that's fine.
We went into the back room and James sat in a chair at the big central table, which was piled high with books. I filled that electric kettle at the sink in the toilet and made two mugs of tea. Yeah, milk and sugar?
No old sugar, thanks.
Yeah, I think the milk's okay. It's yesterday's, but it tastes all right.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Well, this is a great collection of books here. Some interesting ones on steam railways. Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I did part of a house clearance. I think the owner had been a bit of an enthusiast.
Interesting stuff. You say that you'd seen some fly fishing material here as well?
Yeah, I know there are at least two books on the subject somewhere there. As I say, I haven't been able to sort them out, so you'll just have to hunt through the lot.
That's okay. Quite exciting. You cold?
So you felt it too?
Felt what?
The cold draught, the icy chill in the air in here.
No, I can't say I have.
But you said...
I just wondered why we're wearing the flying jacket.
Oh, yes. I wore it to go home yesterday. Looks as if it was going to rain.
Well, I don't think it would be much good in the rain. I reckon it would soak it up like a chamois leather.
Yeah, probably. I'll put it back on the dummy. And that's what I did. I put the jacket back on the dummy in the window. I took my reading glasses from the battered face and dressed the neck with a rather scruffy silk scarf. He looked quite the part of the devil-may-care flying ace. I stood the dummy once more, looking out of the shop window at the passers-by. I then took the two now-empty tea mugs to the toilet and washed them. It only took a minute, but when I came back out, James gone. Yeah, gone. Not just left that back room and the piles of books, but gone. Left the shop. Soundlessly, he'd left the premises. No goodbye, nothing. Even the piles of books now looked undisturbed, as if he'd never been there. I became concerned that something had happened to cause him to leave in such a hurry. Something he'd found amongst those books, perhaps. Or something I'd said. I would go and talk with him about it. I left the shop, and as I locked the shop door, I noticed that the heavy clouds above threatened rain. I really must leave a coat in the shop for such occasions. I would have to persist with the flying jacket. I glanced back into the shop window, and despite it being far from clean, the view of the dummy, now wearing just the shabby silk scarf, was plain to see. The flying jacket had gone. How had James tidied the great mound of books, taken the jacket from the dummy, and left the shop in total silence while I rinsed a couple of teacups? And why? I walked home at speed, hoping to avoid the rain. I was lucky. The rain never came. After a brief snack and a cup of tea, I sat at the dining room table with those scraps of paper which recorded my sales and purchases. I was somehow meant to produce meaningful accounts from this material. It seemed a pointless exercise. I made enough to pay the shop rent and the council tax and buy sufficient food to stay alive. I was happy and fulfilled. That's surely the only balance sheet I need. I struggled for a while to make sense of this paper chase, but my mind was not wholly on the task. My memory kept throwing me back to the events of the last 2 days. What had happened to make James leave the shop in such a hurry this afternoon? And why had he taken the flying jacket? I would go to his house now and find out. James lived just 4 doors away from me at the end of our cul-de-sac. It was the best-kept house and garden in the area. The rest of us in Little Coat Rise made perfunctory efforts at gardening, but James's plot was a horticultural delight. It always seemed such a shame that, being at the end of a no-through road, the garden was not seen and enjoyed by passers-by. I made my way up the block-paved pathway between beautiful standard roses, flanking an immaculately manicured lawn, to the gleaming dark blue front door, and rang the bell.
Hello, Leonard. Do come in.
Thanks, James. Hope I'm not interrupting anything.
No, not at all. Nice to see you. I've seen you since... when? Well, it must have been the parish meeting about the new bypass.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, until this morning.
This morning?
Yeah, this morning. How were the Tench? Any luck?
Tench?
Yeah, you were going fishing this morning and you came to the shop this afternoon.
Fishing? Look, sorry, Leonard, I've never been fishing in my life. You must be confusing me with someone else.
No, come on, James, you're pulling my leg. I met you early this morning on your way to the canal to fish. You asked me if I had any fishing books at the shop, and you came down this afternoon to have a look.
Look, Leonard, I'd like to help you, but the truth is we haven't met for about a couple of months. As for your visiting your shop this afternoon, that just can't be, because I was in London until 3:30. In fact, I've only just got home. Either it was someone who looks like me, or you just dreamed it.
I didn't dream it, James. It all happened. I don't know why you're doing this. If this is an attempt to play with my sanity, I have to ask why. I mean, what have I ever done to you to deserve such deceit? I'll let myself out.
Look, Leonard, I'm not attempting anything. I really know nothing of these events. Nothing.
Yeah, all right. Thank you, James, and goodbye. I had reached the front door. Beside the door was a row of coat hooks. Hooks that had been obscured by the open door when I arrived. I stopped in my tracks. There, on a hook, was that flying jacket. There was no doubt that it was the same one. There was a small triangular tear to the leather on the left shoulder. I turned to James, who had followed me down the hallway. If you didn't come to my shop this afternoon, then how did you get this?
Oh, my God. This was in your shop?
You know very well that it was.
It all makes sense now. Look, please come back and sit down. I'll make a cup of tea and explain to you just what I think has been going on.
Yeah, okay, but I want the truth. No more games.
The truth, I promise. Come and sit down.
I sat in the drawing room while James made tea. I was intrigued by this strange story. How had the flying jacket provided the key to such a mystery? James returned with a tray holding a china teapot, two bone china cups and saucers, a cream jug and a sugar basin. No scruffy mugs in this household.
What I'm going to tell you will challenge your mind. I find it difficult to believe it myself, even though I know it with certainty to be true. My father was born in 1918, the last year of World War I. He joined the RAF in 1936 and trained to be a pilot. In 1938, he met and married my mother, who was a civilian employee at an RAF station in Manston, Kent. I was born in 1939. I don't remember very much about my father. He was a Hurricane fighter pilot and was shot down over the English Channel in 1940. He was rescued but died from his wounds in a military hospital 4 days later. He's buried in Manston on the Isle of Thanet. Now, all of this is, of course, unremarkable. Tragically, hundreds of young RAF pilots lost their lives in that war. What makes my father's case unusual lies in what he left behind. After his death, his close friend, who was also a pilot, contacted my mother and gave her her dead husband's flying jacket. He apparently loved this jacket and would go nowhere without it. My mother cherished it and kept it safe. She swore that it held the very soul and essence of my father. I had not seen the jacket until my mother died in 1998. In her will, she had expressly instructed that the jacket be kept safe. Well, it meant little to me, but since it was my mother's wish, I made sure that it was kept in a safe and secure cupboard here at home. All was well until a little over a year ago, this house was burgled. I'd been away for a weekend, and when I returned, the place had been turned upside down. I don't keep cash or anything of great value here, so I didn't suffer a great financial loss. But a locked cupboard probably promised great things, so they smashed it open. I can't imagine what they thought when they found that such security surrounded an ancient, shabby flying jacket. But they took it anyway. It was from that time onwards that strange things began to happen.
How strange?
You're going to find this difficult to believe.
I doubt it, but try me.
I began to feel that the jacket was mine and that I must get it back at all costs. Well, I hunted through adverts for second-hand clothing, went to jumble sales and boot sales. I advertised in the wanted columns of local and national papers and magazines. I became totally obsessed. And whenever I managed to convince myself to stop this irrational behaviour, something powerful and threatening would drive me on with renewed vigour. I could do nothing other than hunt and search for that missing flying jacket. You may know that my wife left me about 3 months ago. I can't blame her. I love her very much, but everyone and everything comes to a poor second to that jacket. I've stolen, lied and cheated in my quest. And I've lost everything I cared for.
Well, your quest is over. It's on that hook in the hall. Lock it away and get on with your life.
Yes. If only it was that simple. But more recently, I've been subject to the most strange and alarming experiences. I don't expect you to believe this, but I want to tell you anyway. I have a need to tell someone before it sends me completely insane. Lately, I've had these intense, out-of-body experiences. I sometimes wake in the night or at any time of the day. As if from some perverse dream. Everything seems so real. I've been pursuing my search for that jacket in the most extraordinary places. I've been given the power to go anywhere I please. And all human limitations are gone. I can fly, walk through walls. I can go anywhere under any pretext. Sometimes I find it, but when I do, I turn my back on it. It seems that the search is more important than the thing itself. So, even though the jacket is physically here now, I don't care anymore. I thought I would feel euphoric when I found it, but I don't. I've given a year of my life and all that I hold dear in pursuit of this jacket. And now that I have it, it doesn't mean a thing. That's strange, isn't it?
Perhaps you just feel that you have nothing more to lose. Look, I'm sorry to hear that you've suffered so much, but have you looked for help? I'm sure that things have been difficult for you, but don't you think that to some degree these events and attitudes become self-perpetuating? Don't you think that sometimes a third party, so someone entirely apart and independent of you and your environment, can place things in a new and clearer light? An unemotional, logical analysis of events. Otherwise, I'm sure there's a danger of believing that every twist and turn of fate fits precisely into some irrational preconception. It sometimes takes a fresh and unencumbered mind to break that self-perpetuating cycle.
Oh, I could quite understand that you don't believe me. I mean, I'm talking about a dream, but a physical reality.
I do believe you. I absolutely believe you. Have you sought medical help?
You mean a psychiatrist?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm not saying...
agree with you entirely. I did precisely that. I went to see a psychiatrist about 3 months ago. He listened patiently to what I had to say and concluded that I am deeply disturbed by the loss of my father, and I've become desperate to reclaim my one tenuous link with him.
And do you believe that?
Not at all. And even if I did believe it, he could offer no cure for my compulsion to find that jacket, no matter how or at what cost.
I suggest you put that thing in a safe deposit box at the bank and then forget about it. Just get on with your life.
Yes, that's a good idea. I'll do that first thing tomorrow.
Or make sure you do. Look, if you need to chat about things at any time, just give me a shout.
Thanks, Len. I appreciate
it. I'll be off then, James. Hope to see you soon. Take care.
Bye, Len. Oh, and how much do I owe you for the jacket?
Nothing. It was always yours anyway. Bye. I didn't see James again for several days. I'd been quite busy at the shop, and I'd actually tidied up and made some sense of the accounts. It was early on a Thursday morning. I'd decided to make an early start at the shop. Those piles of books really needed sorting out. I was just leaving by my rear garden gate when James came along pushing his bicycle.
Morning, Len. You're up and about early. Couldn't sleep.
Oh, morning, James. No, I'm going to make an early start down at the shop.
You retail moguls. What busy lives you lead. I'm just off to do an hour's tench fishing at the canal. They're best first thing in the morning.
I thought you said that you never fished.
Oh, Lord, yes. Ever since I was a kid. I keep meaning to ask you if you have any books on fishing in your shop.
But you've already looked at them. You can look again if you like.
Oh, great. What about this afternoon?
Yes, okay.
Oh, thanks. See you later.
Bye. Yeah, I hope you, catch some tench.
Tench? Oh, yes. Thanks. Bye.
The Shop is a bare-bones production with the following cast. Leonard Davis was played by Dave Baldwin, and James by Howard Jones. Recording and production were by Dave Baldwin.